Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The CDC guidelines on COVID. Question, are we putting profits over people? Well, the nurses union says yes. In the meantime, what one state is doing to fight back. Today on the show, it's the Alliance for American Manufacturing and the Iron Workers out of Erie, PA. Welcome to the Monday, January 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Scott Paul, no stranger to the show. Scott is the executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, now a proud sponsor of the show. The Alliance was founded with a whole lot of help with the steelworkers going back to 2007. And one of the things we're going to get into, number one, you heard me talk about their Made in America holiday gift guide. We'll check to see how that fared this year. They've been doing this for like 8 or 9 years now, trying to call attention to so many companies that still make their goods in the United States. I know we lost a lot of jobs to China, but there's still a lot of companies here that are thriving, and we have to support them. China, boy, that has been a job sucker, no doubt about it. And we just commemorated, it was a sad commemoration, the 20th anniversary of China's entry into the World Trade Organization. And because of that, 3.7 million U.S. jobs were lost due to trade deficits with China. And this is not even the 20-year period. It's 17 years. From 2001 to 2018, three-quarters of those jobs in manufacturing. And when you do the math on that, U.S. workers suffered a direct net wage loss of $37 billion per year due to trade with China. Like I said, they just sucked the jobs right out of America, and it's still going on. I know Trump put some tariffs in there to alleviate it, but we still have a long way to go. One of the things we're going to get into later with Scott is this electric vehicle market. Now, I know the UAW is trying desperately in the Build Back Better bill to include some tax incentives if you purchase a union-made electric vehicle. Well, right now, I mean, something's got to be done, because China, from a number of analysts, is about to flood our shores with electric vehicles. That's right. We're talking millions and millions of vehicles. And you have to keep in mind, China subsidizes their industries, so it's not a fair playing field. And Scott's been on this issue for a number of years, and he is concerned, Congress is concerned, and hopefully we'll be able to fight back, because we don't need a dumping. Just like steel was dumped on our shores, we're going to dump a bunch of electric vehicles on our shores. If you go to the website AmericanManufacturing.org, you might want to check out the top five manufacturing news stories of 2021. And I'm just going to run down them here quickly, and we'll touch on these with Scott. The supply chain shocks, which is still going on, getting better, though. Number two, the infrastructure investment bill. That's the $1.2 trillion investment package, infrastructure investment package, which will rebuild our crumbling roads, bridges, electrical grid, pipelines, public transit, ports, airports, water systems, broadband, you name it. Buying America, Biden did that right out of the chute when he took office. Made in America executive order, we'll check on that. Lots and lots of factory announcements. And apparently, Scott says 2021 saw so many factory announcements, they couldn't even keep up. And a lot of those have to do with electric vehicles. And we'll also touch on China, as I indicated. So Scott Paul will be our first guest. Later in the show, We're going to link up with Tracy Cutright. Tracy is the vice president and business agent for Iron Workers Local 851 out of Erie, Pennsylvania. And he's having a really tough time with a company called Erie Strayer. They were on strike for almost 3 months. And it all had to do with the company being stingy on their dental plan. I mean, there are other issues, but the workers wanted a good dental plan. And they had to go on strike for it. 75 days. And apparently, they're still having some issues. The company tried to bring in some scabs, and two of the workers were fired. They're fighting for them. They got a grievance procedure in place, but the union is strong. 851 out of Erie, Pennsylvania. And it's crazy, too, because the company's got a lot of work. I mean, they're not in a position to have workers go on strike. I don't get that part. And neither does Tracy, and he'll talk about that on the show as our second guest. Well, we have a new year and the same old virus. And the nation's largest union of registered nurses, National Nurses United, is not happy with the Center for Disease Control. In fact, they urge the federal government, specifically the CDC, not to put profits before people and to hold the line on its guidance for firms in the fight against COVID-19. The decision to reduce protections for RNs and other healthcare and frontline workers drew outrage not just from Nurses United, but in a joint statement from that union, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, the AFL-CIO, the United Food and Commercial Workers, the teachers, the steel workers, and the service employees, all of them. Sarah Nelson was the most vocal. She comes to us from the Flight Attendants Union, which is affiliated with the CWA. She said the problem is we are admitting infectious people back into workplaces and onto airplanes. First and foremost, we strongly disagree with the Biden administration's decision to discontinue the enforceable Occupational Safety and Health Administration's Emergency Temporary Standard, ETS, for healthcare workers. With the Omicron variant surging and no permanent standard in place, our frontline heroes are in grave danger of infection. Workplace COVID-19 outbreaks are exploding. Recent data show the number of infections doubled, deaths nearly quadrupled among nursing home workers alone. The joint statement said the ETS, again, that's the Emergency Temporary Standard, made clear to healthcare employers that proven prevention measures limiting airborne exposures to COVID-19 are absolutely necessary and would be fully enforced to keep workers from getting sick and being removed from work. These include improved ventilation, patient screening and respirators, and providing paid leave when workers are infected and must quarantine. The message to every employer is this, says the statement. While vaccines and boosters help prevent serious disease and death, COVID-19 is life-threatening, especially to healthcare and medical workers, and all proven protective measures must remain in place. To protect workers now, we need to build on the emergency standard by making it permanent and not by scrapping it. Now, in the meantime, there's one state going against the CDC, Michigan. Michigan will not immediately implement the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's new COVID-19 isolation guidelines, which shorten the isolation period for those who test positive for the virus. The State Department of Health will review the new guidelines and, in the meantime, will continue to practice the former 10-day isolation guidelines. This is according to a statement the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services released over the weekend. It reads as follows. The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services intends to review the supporting evidence behind this guidance while awaiting additional information from the CDC, specifically for special populations and in high-risk settings. Michigan has faced a high rate of infections. Check this. 11,490 people tested positive for the coronavirus a week ago, Monday. This is due to both the Delta and the new variant, Omicron. The Delta variant has already fueled the current surge in COVID cases and hospitalizations. The high transmissibility of the Omicron variant underscores the importance of Michiganders practicing the COVID mitigation practices that are known to reduce spread and risk. Ensuring that as many people in Michigan as possible are vaccinated is the best protection against additional variants of concern and reduces the strain on hospitals, according to the statement. And they also urge the people in the state to continue to wear masks, socially distance, and test when necessary. And one more here, and this is from Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, talking about the Build Back Better legislation. She said it will make crucial investments in America's working people while creating a fair economy with more opportunities. That's what we voted for in 2020. And she pointed out that even though the Joe Manchin said he doesn't plan to vote for the Build Back Better bill in its current form, this is not a time to give up. It's time to organize and win. We will not rest. We will not give in. Those are the words of Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. And I tell you, it's only appropriate to start off the new year. I know we're 3 days into it, but we talk so much on the show about being made in America. Bring those products back to make them in America. And leading that fight in Washington is Mr. Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Website is AmericanManufacturing.org. And I'll tell you, they did a really good job, and you heard me talking about this on the show, about their Made in America holiday gift guide. And that's exactly what we're going to start off with Mr. Scott Paul. Hey, Scott, welcome back to the show and Happy New Year to you, buddy.
Yeah, Flash, happy 2022. May it be full of new jobs and American-made products for us.
And an end to the virus, please.
Amen.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, I'm hearing, according to the experts, and you know how that goes, that this Omicron should peak maybe in the next 10 days, 2 weeks, and hopefully it'll fade out. Hopefully not another one will come. But anyway, it's a tough situation, and it's screwing up a lot of people who are trying to go back to work. But before we get into the details on that, and I love the story about the five manufacturing news stories of 2021. I want to get into that. But the Made in America Holiday Gift Guide, how did it go for you this year, Scott?
Yeah, well, I know that we heard from companies that were featured in the gift guide. And so your listeners know, we curated a list of great holiday gifts from every state in the country, products that were made in every state in the country, District of Columbia and Puerto Rico. And so the response was overwhelming. We had record traffic to the site, I know, and the manufacturers who we spoke to were well positioned to supply folks because their stuff, Flash, was not ever stuck on a shipping container somewhere in the Pacific Ocean because it was made domestically. And so they had a good year. And I think that certainly folks who were giving and receiving the gifts found that they were in stock and they could get things to their to their recipients on time.
And what are you hearing about the supply chain situation? Is it, I'm hearing it's starting to ease, that what Biden put in place is starting to happen and goods are moving through. But I'd like to get your perspective on that, Scott.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, that some of the bottlenecks that we saw and used this bullwhip effect from the pandemic, and then people, buying stuff because travel and other things were harder. That is just like big waves in a pond. Those ripples are gradually smoothing out, and so I do think that it was something that was dramatically overhyped. I mean, it was real, but Americans are pretty good at solving problems when they put their minds to it, and that's what happened. But I will say this. Yeah, there's a couple of things that haven't changed. And one of the causes that I think a lot of other experts are now looking at, even though they gave the opposite advice 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, is that our supply chains are too hyper-globalized and too just-in-time. And when you have that, disruptions can be created by a single event somewhere around the world. And so I think as we head into 2022 now, that more and more companies are reevaluating their sourcing. That doesn't mean that all of that is going to come back to the United States. It doesn't even mean that, maybe most of that is coming back to the United States. But it is a welcome departure from what we've seen over the last couple of decades, which was a lot of these jobs, these supply chains, moving further and further away from the customers here in America.
I noticed that is one of the top five manufacturing news stories of 2021, the supply chain shocks that rippled not just America, but the entire world. I'm just hoping, and you indicated that some people and some companies have learned their lesson on this, and maybe they'll bring those products back to manufacturing in the United States. I'm hoping that that's going to be the case. One of the issues I know is affecting the auto industry, and you and I have talked about this chip shortage. And I know the prices of used cars have gone up. The prices of new cars have gone up. There's cars sitting on lots because they don't have the electronic components. What are you hearing about that? Is that going to be handled soon, or is that going to take a long time to fix?
So that's a great question, Flash. And things change from time to time. But The semiconductor chip shortage is something that's, I think, on a little bit of a longer time horizon here. And that's because we have very little domestic capacity to produce our own semiconductor chips. We're about 12% of global production. We used to be about one-third of global production about 25 years ago. And there have been some announcements made about scaling up semiconductor production in the United States. Companies like Intel, Global Foundries, and Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, locating new factories in the United States. However, these things don't pop up overnight. They take a couple of years to bring online. They're just complex, and they're not an easy thing to just pop up. Mm-hmm. So we're going to continue to rely on more and more foreign sources for this. There are indications that, you know, 4, 5, 6 months from now, the situation is going to look a whole lot better. But yeah, that's something where original equipment manufacturers in automobiles, electronics, otherwise have been squeezed. And it's a tough market around there. And there are some things that the Congress and the administration can do. And I know that investing in the semiconductor industry in the United States is one of those that's still in progress. That's something that we haven't seen get over the finish line yet, and hopefully we will in 2022.
Buying American products. Last time you and I talked, well, that was written into the infrastructure bill, and that's definitely a highlight for 2021. We actually have a solid infrastructure plan in place, and I guess some areas are seeing the money. With that being the case, bring me up to speed. Now, you said that there was like a website, I think it was buyamerican.gov, and it kind of showcases what's going on in America. So if a company tries to do something that's outside of America, I mean, obviously everybody's going to know that, maybe come down on that company. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Where are we with all that now, Scott?
Yeah, this should be a great year for making progress on President Biden's Made in America pledge that the government would buy American-made products whenever possible and whenever available. And transparency is one of the keys to that. So you're absolutely right. BuyAmerican.gov and MadeInAmerica.gov, there is a transparent review of agencies that have requested waivers saying they can't find a specific product. And so it's searchable, and so it'll be super easy if there's a supplier in the United States to see if there's an opportunity to supply the federal government or a business opportunity in the future to supply the federal government because of a gap that may exist. And this is on two tracks. First, one is that, you know, this is for direct purchases that the federal government may make agency-wide. And Flash, as you mentioned, the other big thing is that the new spending in the infrastructure bill, that $1.2 trillion that Congress did pass last year, that will be subject to what are called Buy America requirements too, which means the iron, the steel, the manufactured goods, the construction materials will have to be made in America. So that's the fiber optic cable, that's the pipes for the water infrastructure, that's the rebar for the road construction, that's the structural steel for the bridges, that's the rolling stock for the transit, and that means American jobs. There are suppliers, original equipment manufacturers all over the country that stand ready, that will be hiring, and that will certainly benefit from this as they make infrastructure better, more efficient for all Americans as we move ahead.
And to your knowledge, Scott, has that ever been done before? Did they ever write language in there saying that you gotta work with American companies? Has that happened?
Yeah, so really good question. So there have been some requirements for some spending in the past, they have also had big, giant loopholes attached to them as well. But this is the first time that we've seen broad application for this amount of money, this $1.2 trillion, where there is an across-the-board Made in America requirement for to access these federal dollars. And so that is something where Biden said he would do it. There were congressional leaders on both sides of the aisle, particularly in the Senate, where it was much more bipartisan than the House of Representatives, who supported this. And so we are definitely poised to make substantial progress on this. But this is something that President Biden deserves full credit for following through and honoring a commitment that he made to America's workers.
So we have the infrastructure bill now in the law, and the big debate in Washington has been this Build Back Better, which stalled because of Joe Manchin's theatrics a couple of weeks ago. I'm just wondering, does the Alliance for American Manufacturing, do you have a position on the Build Back Better? Because that deals more with what's called the human infrastructure. Anything on that, Scott?
Yeah, I think it's an important bill to pass, and it's important for a couple of reasons. From the social side, from the human side, and I'll just say this, there's a reason why it's hard for a lot of folks to reenter the workforce. Childcare just isn't very affordable for most Americans. And so having some mechanism to offset that, I think, is very important. We're never going to go back to the 50s where there was one partner working, one at home with the kids, and you could survive on one income. That would be nice to see. Right. But more and more, it takes two families, two incomes in a family to have that lifestyle. And childcare is the key to that. And for a lot of folks, that's the step between, particularly workers in their 20s and 30s of accessing well-paying jobs. And so I think that's important. And there are other clean energy tax credit and clean energy investments that are in Build Back Better that I think are vital to get off the finish line if we really want to do electrify America's vehicle fleet over the coming couple of decades to make sure that is made in America as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hold that thought, because I want to talk about what China is doing in the EV market. I know Ford, GM, and the new company that used to be Chrysler are ramping up production here. But from what I'm reading, China, of course, they subsidize their industries, is kind of got a jump start on this. We're going to do that in the next segment. Scott Paul joining us on our live line. He comes to us from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Do check out the website. It's AmericanManufacturing.org, AmericanManufacturing.org. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the iron workers out of Erie, Pennsylvania, and they just settled a contract. But there's a couple of issues that remain. Tracy Cutright will be joining us from Local 851. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, we're available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. All right, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Scott Paul on behalf of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, now one of the many proud sponsors, I might add, of America's Workforce. We certainly do appreciate that. Scott, I want to talk about China and what China has done. I remember the posting you did a couple of weeks ago on the 20th anniversary of China's entry into the World Trade Organization, how many jobs have been lost, almost 4 million. And they don't even have the whole 20 years in that latest analysis. It's like 17 years. But we saw bleeding of so many jobs almost immediately when they signed off on that legislation. So now here we are. It's 2022. We're talking about building these charging stations. I know the UAW is lobbying in the Build Back Better piece of legislation a tax credit if you buy an American union-made electric vehicle. They want to jack it up. I believe it's $7,500, something like that. So where are we with China? Because what I'm reading, I think, you know, they scare me. They scare me. And yeah, as you know, they subsidize their industries. And I'm hearing that they're ready to unload a lot of electric vehicles on the U.S. market. What's your take on that, Scott?
Yeah. So one of the things that has benefited the U.S. vehicle market over the last couple of decades is that China has been behind in terms of its vehicle production, in terms of its capabilities, its safety, its scale. And so while you may see, obviously, some European cars, some made in Mexico cars, some made in Korea, made in Japan cars, and elsewhere in Asia, you don't really see a lot of made in China cars on American roads these days. But when it comes to electric vehicles, China has a big head start. And you're right. Beijing, the communist government, has invested tens of billions of dollars into its electric vehicle industry, into companies like Build Your Dreams, BYD, and NIO, to make them global players. And they do have global ambitions now. And you're also right that it is the subsidization by the Chinese government of these companies that are going to allow them to be competitive. And so one thing that I think lawmakers will need to do, and I think you mentioned the tax credits, that we should be very intentional about how we want to grow the electric vehicle market in the United States. And we should not be dependent on the communist government of China to scale up our electric vehicle industry here in the United States. And so having the consumer incentives, I think, is important. Having a made in America electric vehicle charging infrastructure is important. And applying trade laws, I think, will be very important too. And so we have not seen this wave yet. But where it does show up already, Flash, is in things like batteries and components that are and rare earth minerals that are critical components in electric vehicles. And so I think that, again, this is something we talked about in the last segment, semiconductors and the awareness, I think, that lawmakers have about how important that is to our future, to our economic security, to jobs in the United States. I think that there is also a greater awareness of that with respect to these rare earth minerals that go into batteries and then the lithium ion batteries themselves, and to scale that capability up in the United States. And we can do this our own way. We have very innovative companies. We have companies that have decided to make investments in the United States, whether it's Tesla, Ford, GM, or Chrysler, or even some of the Japanese companies that are located in the United States. And so we do have to make sure that they have a level playing field here, and that the largesse of the Chinese Communist Party doesn't create a tsunami of job loss in the United States like it has in so many other sectors before it. You know, if you think of steel or other electronics or many other industries that have just been decimated by this unfair competition over the last couple of decades.
I was reading on your website that it seems like Congress is finally getting the message. And you got to give some credit to former President Trump, because he definitely toughened the U.S. stance against China. And we had the tariffs in place, and Biden did continue those tariffs, right? Did he not?
Yeah, the tariffs that Trump put in, both to gain leverage and to try to offset some of those subsidies, they're called Section 301 tariffs. The Biden administration has largely left those in place. That's absolutely right. And I think that Biden also understands that there's additional work to do with respect to China, because unfortunately, the thing that didn't change, Flash, is that the Chinese imports continue to come into the United States. All those container ships off the West Coast were full of imports, and that's part of the supply chain challenge that we have.
Right.
Is that we depend too much on that, despite the tariffs, and so we need this additional domestic investment. And I think that's the added value that Congress, that Biden administration understand, that the last administration either wasn't interested in or wasn't able to do.
Well, you got the government and you've got big American companies. And I was reading, and this was part of number five of the manufacturing stories from 2021 that we've been addressing on the show, a permanent change in the U.S.-China relationship. It's so important that we all focus, Congress focus, the American people, American businesses focus on what's going on here. And you point out that companies like Yahoo and LinkedIn announced last year that they are departing China because of the environment. It's a hostile environment. But apparently some companies have not gotten the message, and two of them come to light, and they're big ones, Nike and Apple. I guess they're really ingrained in China. What are you hearing about that? I mean, are they at least thinking of leaving there? Because you think about those two companies, tennis shoes and smartphones. I mean, that's a big chunk of American products today.
Yeah, I mean, those are – I mean, I'm glad you mentioned those, Flash, because those are brands everybody knows, right?
Right.
I mean, Apple and Nike. And the unfortunate thing is that they have not changed their ways when it comes to depending on exploitable labor in China, or making deals with the Chinese government, which are silencing them on issues that are probably very important to consumers, such as the genocide of a population of Uyghurs in Western China. Or what's happening in Hong Kong with the erosion of democracy there, or even the fate of one of the the female professional tennis stars based in China who had said that a Chinese Communist Party official sexually harassed her and then more or less disappeared. So this is a big challenge. This is going to come to a head this year because you obviously have the Olympics in Beijing that I think are going to provide a focus on this. You have new sanctions that have been passed by the Congress and signed by the administration, designed to prevent forced labor by this Uyghur population in Western China. And you do see companies doing the right thing, like Yahoo, LinkedIn, you mentioned, are good examples, but there's still plenty of those that cannot shake their dependency on the system of exploited labor in China and are fearful of the response of the Chinese government. And what I think the Biden administration, Congress has to do is have their backs. And also, if consumers in the United States are able to express their concerns about some of these companies' practices, that will provide a countervailing pressure as well. But you're going to see heightened attention to this flash in 2022. These issues, unfortunately, aren't going away. China isn't getting any more democratic.
Nope.
In many ways, the freedoms are being eroded particularly for vulnerable populations there.
Yeah, it's slave labor. That's exactly what we're dealing with. And these companies figure, hey, why not set up shop in China? We got slave labor there. We're going to make more money. I mean, it helps our bottom line. And that attitude, I get it. I mean, they're in there to make a profit. But come on now. Come on, we cannot continue as a society if we're going to do that kind of thing. All right, good stuff. Scott, always a pleasure having you on the show. Scott Paul, Executive Director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, now a proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Well, you take care. I know you're a busy, busy guy. Let's check in later next month. How's that sound?
Yeah, can't wait. And hope 2022 treats you and yours very well, Flash.
Thank you so much. Scott Paul on our live line. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the iron workers out of Erie, Pennsylvania.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome to the show, Mr. Tracy Cutright. Tracy is Vice President and Business Rep for the Ironworkers out of Erie, Pennsylvania. That would be Local 851. And he's kind of a happy camper today. You know, it's not perfect, but they got a deal with Erie Strayer. Took some time, and it took a strike to get them to see the light of day on this. Hey, Tracy, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining America's Workforce today.
Hey, thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Before we get into the story there, how long have you been an iron worker? What got you into this line of work?
Well, I actually came over from a couple other unions. I've been with this local since 2019. I've always been a union advocate. Despite every job I've ever had was some type of a union gig. And, you know, my parents, my uncles, aunts, everything in this in this area were in the unions at one time, and so it was just, that was what was going to happen. I was going to be involved in the unions.
There you go. Yeah. Well, that's a very strong union area. Lots of union density in Erie, Pennsylvania, no doubt about that. So talk to me about Erie Strayer. I guess they were really playing hardball with you guys, right?
They were. They came out and basically drew a line in the sand on like the second day. We wanted a dental plan. This bargain unit had wanted one for the last two contracts, and they'd been 5-year deals. So at least the last 10 years, they'd wanted a dental plan. We're unsuccessful. And so we put that at the top of our list. And they kept saying, you know, you're never getting it. You're never getting it. You might as well drop it. And we refused to drop it. And it did take a strike, 75 days. But in the end, about I had a heart attack when their proposal came across with the dental plan on it.
Almost 3 months on strike.
Almost three months. Yes. Yeah.
Let me get this straight. It was all about the dental plan. What about wages and other benefits?
Well, wages were an issue too. They wanted, they were lowballing it. When we actually went on strike, they were offering zero in the first 2 years of a 5-year contract, and it was like 5 cents in the third year, 10 cents in the fourth year, and 15 in the fifth year. So there was no place to go. It was like we were being run down a cattle chute that entire process towards a strike. Just their bargaining. They were bargaining very hard. And but the guys knew it. They knew it in April when the contract expired April 1st. They knew it was going to take a strike. We didn't want them to go on strike, obviously. We kept thinking something would happen at the table. But unfortunately, it didn't.
What about the solidarity among the members? You say that they figured a strike was going to happen. When it did happen, how did they rally together? Maybe you could speak to that part. And as far as the community rallying around the strikers.
Oh, yes, yes. The men were lockstep. When we took the strike vote, it wasn't unanimous, but most people that were there to vote, they had no problem with the strike. There was a majority rules. We did have a couple guys cross the picket line. But the guys that stayed out, when we ran this thing, at the end, we had 28 guys. We were running a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour operation, you know. And the community in Erie was just incredible. They came out, day one, we had a nurse who had seen it on the news. It had a news guy down as we were setting up, and she seen us on the news. She brought us some coffee and donuts. She was the first one, and it didn't stop until the last day. They were still dropping off sandwiches and lasagna and you name it, coffee, propane. Yeah. It was just incredible. It really was. I was so proud. Of the labor community and in the community in general, you know.
What about the history of this company? I mean, I would imagine they're making some money. I mean, the work environment is pretty strong right now, and also this is a two part question here. Did they try to throw in some replacement workers or scabs? Was that the case?
Yeah, the company's been around since like 1912 or something, and the last I'd say 50 years or so they've made cement batching plants, you know, like where you pour bridges in airports and stuff. You know, you got the mixers on site, that type of stuff that they make. And so with that infrastructure bill passing, it was nothing but up with this company. I mean, everybody was going to need these products. You know, if you're a big contractor and you're planning on pouring a bridge, you're going to need something like this. So I think that kind of put some pressure on them there at the end, too. They're like saying, well, we can't continue this because people are going to want to put orders in and they're going to know we're on strike. And the company, they played pretty hardball all the way to the end. We did get them a 3% wage increase, which was, you know, substantial. It's like double what they got last time, to tell you the truth, you know. So they were happy with it, and as long as the men are happy, I'm happy.
There you go. How many years on the contract?
Five. We did not want a 5-year for obvious reasons, but they were insistent upon it. In order to get the deal, we had to go with the 5-year.
I hear you. Now, are they still behaving themselves now that they have a contract with you, with Local 851? What's the story there?
No, unfortunately, they're not. We have 4 unfair labor practices against the company already. They fired 2 of the striking workers. Both of them were pretty vocal during the strike, you know, calling out the scabs and whatnot. They also implemented a work rule that's, you know, illegal against the contract and labor law, and a couple other things. So I thought that we was going to get some labor peace, but obviously we're not. We're going to continue to fight this company for, you know, however long it takes.
So they fired 2 of the workers. I would imagine you're going to fight for their jobs back. How does that look?
Well, it actually, in both cases, it looks very well, very good. The one was just like they stacked up 4 charges. They fired him. They gave him like 5 points for walking in a door and 5 points for walking out the same door. His car had broken down on the 23rd, and he ended up walking to work, and he walked through a door that they said he wasn't allowed to go through. And so basically it was a bam, bam, bam. They gave him 3 charges with these shot points and terminated him without any discussion with him at all. It was just sort of like let him go. And the other fellow was actually on probation when we went on strike. And the day after they went back, they terminated this guy, said he had performance issues, but he had nothing in his file. It's pretty clear that it's retaliation.
Just amazing.
We have the grievances, and we have the unfair labor practices. So between either the grievance process or the board, hopefully we get these guys their job back.
Well, they have to be thankful for the union, and that's a story that needs to be continued on this show. You take care, my friend. At least you got the contract, but there's still a few bumps in the road. Erie Strayers, the name of the company. They're in Erie, Pennsylvania. Again, we're talking with Tracy Cutright. Tracy is the vice president and business rep of Local 851 of the Ironworkers. Ironworkers National, also proud sponsors of America's Workforce. Well, you hang in there. Keep in touch with us on those grievance procedures, okay?
I sure will. Thank you for having me, and you guys have the rest of your days. It'd be great.
You got it. And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Tim Berga of the Ohio AFL-CIO and the latest from Labor's Local 860. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group.
find out more information online at labortools.com.